come everybody the new year 2030. It's our first meeting in 2013. But we are having our first meeting when Honorable Mthambi she's having her birthday today. I'm not sure about the number. I only know that it's her birthday today. Of course, I've seen the interaction with the supporter person, I'm not sure about the conservation of land. For the birthday, I don't know. Probably the discussion they'll carry on during the tea break.
I'll be happy to help you, Chair.
Those discussions will continue during the tea break. It's fine. Welcome, members, to our meeting. We are supposed to and welcome also supported by the chairperson and the CEO. There are also quite a number of board members who are also here, which I hope will be introduced at the appropriate time by the chair and the CEO accordingly, the executive and board. We are supposed to deal with the progress report on the issue of labor broker. Post office made a presentation last year. I'm sure it was the 21st of August or around that time. This is a progress report in terms of the match. I'm sure members still remember that post office employees which were under labor brokers or under labor brokers, they petitioned the Speaker of Parliament about their plight in post office. And as a response to that, as a committee, we then took up the matter in terms of following up to make sure that the issues are being addressed. But it's a matter which, from time to time, probably be able to have a progress report. So until the matter is finally dealt with and we are able to write the final report to the Speaker's office explaining how the matter has been finally handled by both office and board. The second issue is around the issue of the term for the program for the September, which I hope members they do have the program. But probably before we deal with the actual two issues, members, we need to deal with some of the issues which they need your input. The first issue is around the issue of the advert of the resignation of a board member in the SABC, and we are required to fill that particular position. Formally, the matter has already been referred to the committee. But on the referral of the matter to the committee by the speaker or from the department, there is an indication that there is a specific skill which is needed, auditing and accounting, which is lacking. Encouraging the board and so on. So that referral got that request that the replacement should have capacity around the issue of auditing and accounting. Now, in trying to come up with an advert, we had to consult with the legal people, which unfortunately in the current provision of the law, we don't have an explicit accounting and auditing. In the current provision of the law, you look at section 13.4a, it's talking what comes close to what we want is what you call the area of business practice and finance. That is currently in that section. It's not explicit as auditing and accounting. So the reason, members, why we have to go to them is that it might not help us to advertise all the broader requirements. Because what will happen, we'll have thousands of nominations, but not coming close to the scale which we wanted the SABC. So we wanted to minimize the requirement so that at least people who are nominated are people who come close to what we think we must be able to have at the SABC and so on. So they've done the request to minimize that, but it will appear as a business practice and finance. But because we don't have it at accounting and auditing and so on. So that's how we end up discussing with the legal people to craft it in that way so that we entrepreneurs, lawyers applying, other ones whether we don't need a local person, we need a finance person and so on. But I needed to report it to the committee so that you are kept abreast in terms of that particular matter. Honorable Kira?
Thank you, Chair. I think I've covered the fact that you have made reference to business as well, because our latest legislation has quite excellent experience in governance issues, management, etc. So I think if we go with business and finance background, it would come along. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are we okay on that matter? Now, members, linked to that, we have a love letter from, it's not a love letter, because we're from Valentine, so some of us will see the if you don't celebrate, you didn't celebrate your Valentine, not my problem, but it's fine. The second issue, members, around the immediate after the resignation, I'm sure some of you have seen in the newspapers and so on that we have been written a letter by several of our SADC, which was seeking to say the committee must try to investigate what is the cause of the resignation in the SADC. But they were also linking that to the other previous resignation of 2010, something like that. Now, and probably the difficult thing, because the first request that document was provided to members, is that you see that several SABC has returned to the president to get the reason for the resignation for the members, which almost all of them they did give those letters or reasons, except that Dr. Makeshe on that letter refused and requested that her reason cannot be made public. In the letter, which was the response from the president's office after they requested the information. So the reason for the resignation for Dr. Makeshe remains a persona issue. She refused that. That must be public. Now, which makes it difficult because I don't know what are her actual reasons for resignation, whether it's linked to the other resignation of the other four board members or something else and so on, or the personal matter and so on. I can't tell what's exactly around that. But the server or SAPC, they were saying we must have sort of engagement or sort of a hearing to probe in terms of why people are signing in the SAPC and so on and so on, all those things and so on, which sometimes it becomes a difficult exercise. I was thinking on my own, how do you do that? Do you call a public hearing and call the resigned people and say, come here and tell us? Or probably what we must start to think about is that what is it which is currently lacking on the legislation? Because if you look, the current act does not have the provision of the exit interview and exit report. The act as it stands now. Probably these are the weaknesses of the current legislation, which as we deal with amendments and other things, these experiences will help us to be able to say, because now we understand what are the other issues which crop up but are not covered in terms of the act. Because probably if the legislation was saying people must submit a report if they resign and so on, then you've got a better basis of engaging on those reports and the other things and so on. But as it stands now, they are not even resigning to us as committee. They are resigning directly to the president. By the time it comes to us, the president has already accepted or not accepted the resignation. Now we are dealing with the consequence of a matter which has already been decided. So it becomes a very difficult issue in terms of how at the level of the committee interacts with those issues in most instances and so on. But that was the letter from SABC, which was returned to the committee. And then they go further and talk about the other issues which I think processes are busy going on around those particular processes and so on. But I started to indicate that the proper members, they can have a way in terms of how to engage with the matter. But the weakness is that sometimes if you don't have a basis of dealing with issues and just dealing with them, it poses a lot of challenges. Honorable Leader Hen was up, seen in Moroto.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, not necessarily because of the HIV later, but I do believe that it is a matter of concern, and this committee should somehow look at the reasons why we have seen so many resignations from the HIV people. Now, we could approach it in different ways. We could perhaps just look at the details of the resignation letters, which are on the SOS website. Look at this and then engage the board on those matters during the session. For that matter, we could do it next week to say that this is what we have noted and we raise a matter of concern. Because it could point to governance problems, the relationship between the board and the executive, all of those matters. I don't think we can just cop a blind eye. If we do that, we're certainly not exercising our oversight to keep the institution accountable. Now, I hear what you're saying as far as legislation is concerned, and that is a weakness. So we could then proceed and say to them if they could provide some suggestions on how we could revise the Act to make provision for that, exit interview or reasons, etc. Because you see, when we engage people in interviews, we go through long processes, we test their willingness to serve, etc., etc., and only to find after a period of 1.5 or 2 years, you'll find the first one after the other resignation. So we can't just cast a blind eye on that. My suggestion would be that you actually allow for such a discussion. If we proceed next week with the SA Broadcasting Corporation, that we also consider that matter and come up with constructive proposals of how are we going to address it in terms of shortcomings in the legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I think this is a tricky one because she has obviously wanted to protect her privacy. And I think that we must respect that. It seems to be a sort of isolated incident. There doesn't seem to be a sort of a whole rash of business. And I sort of get the feeling that the board is reasonably stable, apart from one of them. But I support Honourable Killian's suggestion. I do think that we need to let every resignation from the board. I do think that we need to, in a secure environment, if the person doesn't want it to be made public, that we do need to understand, and I don't necessarily know that needs to be done with the board. I think we do need to understand why people are leaving, because we take an awful lot of time appointing these people. There may well be issues that they don't want to reveal to the board, you know, a personality clash or some such thing. And so I think that perhaps there needs to be some sort of separate, perhaps a little cluster of a committee or something that can just perhaps interrogate the issue and find out if there is cause for concern. There may well not be in this case, but I think we need to explore it next week.
Honourable Tour? Not at the time.
Thank you, Chairperson Mayor. You know, Chairperson, I think I would concur with the speaker on the privacy of McKay. I think really we should respect it. I'm just thinking, Chairperson, you know, because we are tasked with the responsibility of interviewing people, you know, at the entry point. And it's just unfortunate that the exit, we are not involved. As you have said already, it is the president that is involved. And I don't know as Parliament that how do you practice our oversight over that. I've heard what Honourable Killian is saying about maybe getting information on internet about the resignation letter. But I also thought if the presidency thinks that Parliament should be doing it, they should have given us the information and sent us those letters. And I think it's their responsibility because the exit, it is done by the presidency. So that if, as a chairperson, you really inquire about our oversight practice that we can do over this in Parliament, because it's quite different. This is Parliament and we are talking about the President. And I think we should find out whether it is legitimate for us to go and get information from internet and just as a committee interrogate what happened. Because I thought this should be done by the presidency, forwarding the information they have to Parliament so that we can go on with our oversight. That's where I wanted to use the legitimacy of our oversight role. And I also think about the legislation, you are quite right, Chairperson, because it is making mockery of us as the committee that we are dealing with there. Entry and to be excluded at the exit. I think we should look at the loopholes on the registry. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Motu. The birthday girl.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. I want to just modify the proposal, Honourable Duyen. You remember, prior we went on recess, we commissioned the AG to look at the contact of one board member of the SABC to conduct an inquiry on our behalf. My understanding is that the inquiry will also help us to determine whether that board is functional or dysfunctional. I would say, looking at our problem, you know we've got a message, our problem is not the issue that we're going to discuss. On our agenda. I don't think we'll ever have ample time to deal with that issue. I was proposing to say, why can't we wait for the outcome and the findings of the AC on the board matter? Then we'll also have to look at what it's said by SABC, what is ABC. I was proposing today, rather than us dealing with the matter, I think we can deal with it politically when we get it.
Thank you, Honourable Killen, we are fine with that.
The Honourable Bertangel has privileged information with regards to exactly what is happening in the in SCOPA, and as long as we get a report after full investigation, Chair, because as I say, we cannot simply just cast a blind eye. It is important for us to keep it, to keep our eyes on the radar. When we engage in this process, we need to also know what is really at the root of this trend, but I think I concur with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, I hope we must put that we tender for us to raise the issue, to bring to our attention. I mean, perhaps we will continue looking to them as we engage with the SABC from time to time. But hopefully that as members are saying, that some of the reports or investigation will be able to help us in terms of dealing with the matter. Thanks very much, members. The other issue which I wanted us to deal with is from Honourable Sheen. It's in relation to Councillor Lebowa of ICAP. The one was reported in newspapers that has been attacked and is alleged that he is hijacking and so on is linked to his work in ICASA. That's how far I can go. I don't want to be attached as a respondent in court. That we have reported that people have done 1, 2, 3, but the answer of the letter is there in terms of Honorable Singh to say, how does, as a committee, ensure the safety of the family of the Lebowa? Because when this thing happens, also affects the family. But subsequent to that, he has now formally written a letter itself, indicating that seemingly the matter in ICASA has not been treated with the urgency it deserves. His life is at risk. He has not have security. And subsequent to that is that there is no even clarity in terms of how legally it is going to be supported. Or that letter is addressed to the minister and also to the portfolio committee and so on. But it just ties with the letter which was written by Honorable Sheen on the 7th of February around this matter in terms of Councillor Di Bua, who seems to be followed from time to time. And so on. The suggestion by Honorable Sheen was that we should give Councillor Di Bua an opportunity to brief us exactly what is happening around these circumstances and so on. So that was the recommendation or the suggestion from Honorable Sheen. That's what we must do and so on. So we can talk to that. I'm sure members, I'm taking for granted that members, they are aware that Councillor Di Bua, when we're supposed to go to the oversight, he was supposed to go with us in Eastern Cape, but he never made it to his flat because he was then hijacked in the process. And then there are sort of allegations that licenses are involved, da da da, and so on and so on, which we can't confirm now at this point. So he ended up not going to the oversight, then he was hospitalized and everything, traumatized and all those things for almost a week. He only came back after a week or so back to work and so on. So that's the issue which they were trying, I'm talking about his members, and probably they never picked it up. But in relation to the letter by Honorable Sheen. Honorable Sheen?
Thank you, Chair. I also asked that the Chancellor of the board come here. And explain to us if there is a concerted effort by the Council to track down people who haven't been paying their application fees and their license renewals, which is what the Council said that he was investigating at the time of hijack. And if there is a concerted campaign going on and by the Council to do this. And what is their attitude to one of their councillors who is actually appointed by Parliament being subjected to this kind of intimidation that you're putting in. I don't really did this. I don't think that for a moment, judging from what I've read, that this was just a random act of hijacking, and particularly the subsequent events that happened, vandalism at his home and constantly being followed by cars, really is in fear for his life. And I just think that in Carter is the employer. I thought it's statement that I read in, I think it was the Mail and Guardian, seemed to be fairly dismissive of the incident, which I think is regrettable, because if I was putting my life on the line for my employer, I'd like to show a little more enthusiasm about supporting me. And I think that it's important for ICASA to come as well, the board to come explain what is the current activity to get people to pay, and what they are doing to protect their councillors and particularly Councillor Boer. So I thought it was important to hear this as a matter of urgency. I mean, we hear this kind of thing happens to prosecutors and police investigators all the time. And I think that the fact that this is now moving into, or could be moving into, an activity that we actually have mandated ICASA to, you know, get its act together and collect in all its outstanding fees. So he's almost acting on our mandate. And I think that we need some sort of firm action and some firm understanding of what is going on here.
Before I even respond to this, I want to know how many items I'm dealing with before we deal with the powder. Because I really think we need to improve our agenda. We do put on paper, but I don't have anything like that. I just asked from one of my colleagues. It only says there's one item. Now we've got numerous things that we're doing, which are taking time from this. And we think we should have been told so that we get ready for the country. I would agree with the Honorable Sheen on the matter. I just wanted to know whether the proceedings of the inquiry, are they still on? If they are, I would like us really to respect the fact that this is still
might interfere with the inquiry. Maybe I'm not well invested with the whole issue. Someone can assist me so that I do respond, responsibly for this matter. But I think if that is the case, this has been completed, then we can call to come and give us the information of what has transpired and deal with some of the vulnerabilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisbon.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
And welcome in 2030.
Not really meditating. I've been here even last week, Chairperson. But
in the committee meeting.
But it's just a VA that in terms of time from Devon to Cape Town, when we started at 9:30, it's given that I'll be late here, unfortunately, and I can't control that. But let me just deal with the matter that I raised my hand for, okay? Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I agree with the previous speakers, but more on what Member Mustuaya has said, because I wouldn't like to play with people's emotions. To raise hope that there is something that we can do outside what ordinarily the accounts are supposed to be doing and which we should respect. And also we should probably separate the issues. The council member issue and also us getting an update in terms of licensing and those ones have not renewed and renewed and all that, so that we don't also doubt the issues. For me, I think we need to respect that. And the council should also assure some things, if they happen, there is a policy that guides them how to deal with them and report it to the relevant powers may be, your staff and all that, to do the investigation on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mutambi. Maybe before Honorable Mutambi, Honorable Tekan.
Thank you, Chair. I was very calm with the thing she was saying. If she could please very humbly, Master, you speak into the mic. I didn't hear everything. I'm sorry. So, yeah, but that's fine. I was going to say, indeed, we have an obligation to protect people in their course of duty. You see, it's easy for with ministers because and premiers, those type of offices, because they are international standard that kind. That it is protocol, you provide bodyguards, you provide protection for those type of offices. Now, obviously, with government, it could not just be ICASA, it will also be many other offices where you take unpopular decisions, and as a result, in a kind of country where there's crime and people can act outside the rule of law, we feel I want to take action outside the rule of law. Now I'm saying, I think we should also request our researchers to check international, because we are not the only country in the world that is safe, I'm sure, with this type of this thing. But in other countries, other offices where people get threatened, how do they handle it? Because the only president is going to come. You do it here, it will provide bodyguards. And if indeed we should do so for the good of our nation, we should. But I'm saying we should look at it closely, because it might not just be a Catalan, it might be other people, because unfortunately decisions are taken on daily basis and people get threatened. So maybe our researcher must look at an international good practice somewhere, so that when we do it, we know it is something that we hold. As to the issue of sub judice, I think legal people can ask for legal advice from our legal team, but I don't think people in the affected really. Sub-GDK is so that people can die because we can't take action because the case is in court, if need be. Short.
Mutambi?
Thank you, Jefferson. The latest media report that I read over the weekend was that
that Ricardo was going to consider the matters of security. That's what I heard. But the point that I wanted to raise was that the question of communication. Last week I heard of a huge fraud in the post office on the media. I'm not seeing the typical example now that they are in. But I wonder if maybe the chairperson of the post office had a different to brief you as the chairman of the committee so that you are taken on board on the event that are happening. Because the issue of the council also is the same thing. We must remember there's a shareholder too, who is the minister. They might have reported to the minister, I don't really know, but not taking for granted that they need to come and report to us. But remember also that there was that issue of one councillor who breached the ICASA Act by leaking information. That report never came to other parliaments. I think those are issues that we need to seriously let the ICASA, even if it's not them coming, but that decency of them taking us on board as members of parliament so that we don't release these media reports that are flying all over. I mean, it doesn't take the chairman of the council's time just for him to write a letter and explain on the series of events and forward the letter to you, chairman. I think that's the thing that we need to raise with our entities, because really we won't have the leisure of time for us to call all of them all the time to come and see the chairman. Other is the matter of information. And I think them as cut boards, they've got this corporate governance issue that they need to deal with. And I think we've deployed competent, skilled people who are able to deal with the day-to-day issues of running the entity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Stein.
Chair, thank you very much. It's a pity we're taking it at the end here, because what I really wanted to do was make a suggestion. We've been dealing largely with housekeeping issues, and I wanted to suggest that we continue with presentation and have EOD after the presentation.
And that was the strategy to take you last. And seems to be working that way. Because there are 10 members, but I appreciate that indeed members are concerned about the safety and the security of one person which we have appointed or recommended in Parliament and appointed to serve one of in the regulator and so on. But probably members, the issue of security probably is a matter which we might have to follow up with the ICASA and the Minister and DOC in ensuring that the issue of security, I think, is paramount important. Whether the case is still going on or not, but the security of the family and the law is a matter which we need to pursue with the ICASA to make sure that they do provide those security, that security and so on. The issue which members are raising to say probably is to request a report from ICASA about all the companies and level of compliance in license payment. If there are gaps there, but that also includes cost of it, I suppose. I don't know whether they do pay for that license to open it. So. But probably that would be the best way to just get an overview in terms of the level of compliance, in terms of appointment for licenses and so on, by the regulator and so on. I hope that will help us to separate the issues, Honorable Zoma was saying. The issue of security and the issue of compliance and so on, while the law enforcement agencies, they continue to do their work in terms of investigating the case and the other things and so on. Probably we can separate those matters in that manner and so on. I think those are the issues around this particular matter. But I think what's paramount important is your concern about the safety of the councillors. We participate in the appointment and then they can't be left out there to die. And to rely on themselves when they execute their duties. If it's correct that the whole thing is linked to their work and so on, unless it's proven otherwise. But with that, members, I'm sure that was the last issue which I wanted us to deal with. I take the point by Honorable Mbo too, that the issue must be put on the agenda. It's not that I don't want to report on issues all by myself. It's better highlighting these issues, come even if there's an action taken, but report to the committee so that you understand where we are and what are these issues and so on. We will continue members to the presentation by post office. Chairperson, I was told that your presentation is only 5 minutes. So that's why I thought we can do these issues and still delete your presentation and discussion and finish.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how true is that. And the other thing, members have indicated informally, is that there's been a lot of presentation coming from staff. I'm not even sure which one exactly. Probably before we even go into a presentation, we need to establish which presentation. One member saying they got 2 or 3 presentations, something like that. Probably it's important just to ascertain out which one are we using so that we don't have.
Honourable Chair, my sincere apology out there. You're probably sitting with more than one presentation. Because of the time issue, we took a resolution as a board that whenever we come to Parliament, as much as the executives are responsible to craft the presentation on behalf of the board, it's always important for the board to look at the presentation because we take accountability of documents being presented to Parliament as a board. It is for that reason, because of the timing issue, that we eventually had to meet last week on Friday to go through the presentation as a board and give a final approval. Unfortunately for us, obviously the timing in terms of submission, which would have been released through my office, was such that I would have been unable to call a session of the board to be able to get the approval of the presentation. But what you'll see in the presentation, Chair, would be an extension, basically. There would not be any significant changes to the presentation, but just additional information, which was a contribution of the board members based on the deliberation of the board. So it is for that reason that you would be sitting with more than one presentation. But thank you, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity. And I think for the hand.
Sorry, Chair. I understand what the problem was. Now, we're just having the difficulty because obviously I've now declined, one because I don't want to give more trees. But now I'm possibly going to sit with the outdated one. And I just make a suggestion, Chairperson, if this happens, if we could just perhaps ask that you have, first draft and date or whatever, and then final approved, so that we understand which one are we sitting, which one is right one, etc. It just makes it easier for us, battling with paper on our desk.
Thank you for the suggestion, duly noted, and we'll make sure that we do it. In fact, that's the right way to do it, because you can always make reference to... I apologize, my chair. I certainly need the protection. I proceed, Chair. Chair, thank you. Compliments to members of the committee. Some of the members, I'm seeing them for the first time this year. Late as it is, but compliments to the new citizen. I've met some of the committee members when we did the site visit in Umtata. And happy birthday to Honorable Mutambi. Chair, I can assure you safely that I'm quite aware of the age. I was at some point in varsity with her, so I don't have to disclose it, but we were at university together at some point in our life. Honorable Chair, I'm accompanied by members of my shareholder representative, a team led by Mr. Sam Vilapasi, and they're sitting far down there, Chair, if members can see them, and also by 4 of my board members. What I think about the gentleman, Mr. Sam Vilapasi,
the gentleman in the committee, that is the name, the gentleman.
I'm losing track of my presentation, Chair. Be that as it may, Chair, I'm also accompanied by 4 of my board members just to do an introduction of the members of the board. I have with me Ms. Latemba Keller. She's the chairperson of the HR committee. I have also Mr. Daniels, Elmi Daniels, who's a resident here in Cape Town. He's the chair of the audit committee. In
particular because of the financial implications around the presentation which the board had to look at because of a number of consideration financial that we had to look at as board. Ms. Wukem Tetwa, she's the chairperson of the Postbank subcommittee of the board, not the Postbank board left as such, but the subcommittee of the board. Also, Mr. Patel, who's a member of my board, and I'm also accompanied by Group CEO, Mr. Chris Tletani, and members of the executive team. Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to introduce, in line with my undertaking that I've made previously to the committee, that we will be appointing a chief financial officer, who's also an executive director, and sits on my board, Ms. Kumo Muzoso Yana. I will, with your indulgence, and that's part of the gender equality that the committee raised with us, that we have to make sure that when we do the appointment of the CFO, that we do take consideration of the of gender. She's sitting right on my side. Yes, certainly. Certainly, ma. It's with your indulgence whether the committee would like as you just give a brief background of her career. If it's not necessary, I'll move straight to the presentation with your direction, Chair. As you can have 2 minutes. Thank you, Chair. No, accountants and other accountants in their nature, they can't talk them putting together numbers.
Thank you, Chair. You're quite right. I don't talk too much. I am Kumo Muzoso Yana, qualified chartered accountant. Prior to joining SAFO, I was the CFO for the Department of Health Free State. Prior to that, I was a financial manager for Netcare 911. I could go further, but maybe let's cap it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and honourable members. Chair and honourable members, once more thank you for the opportunity for us to share, basically to give an update. We presented our strategy previously sometime in August to the committee. And part of our presentation to the committee, which is also an engagement that we did with other stakeholders, including our shareholder, was also to embrace a position where we are able to have contributions in terms of what would be the right model for support to follow. You'll remember that we had a huge strike that had a huge financial implication on the business. The principle that we adopted as a board basically was to say we would want to adopt a model that would really talk to the national growth path in terms of us creating decent employment. We embraced that principle as a board on the basis that we know the contribution, direct contribution, and the impact of people having decent employment in South Africa, and that would have in the economy. Obviously, as a business, you also have to take into consideration the balance of business as well, in view of the fact that there is a balanced approach in line with the cabinet's regulation. We know that this has been a very topical issue, Chair, which obviously you could not just, as a board, really look at ways in terms of which you can resolve this matter without taking into consideration the different stakeholders and their views. And we gathered that information through the process, Chair, that we appointed a consultant. I know that you were not chairing the committee at the time when we came here for the presentation. And members of the committee accept that if I've been a table would have. Certainly, Chair. Certainly, Chair. The point being, Chair, that a request was made by the committee at the time that we circulate a copy of the consultant report, which we did, which basically dealt with the different models that the board had to look at and finally adopt a model that would seem to be the right model for our business. I think we highlighted during that time, Chair, that there is always an issue of seasonality that we would have to consider from time to time. But basically, the CEO will go through the detailed presentation, going back into the background, and also share the journey map, and the journey map would look at the different models, just to refresh the memory of the committee in terms of what we presented previously, so that we're able to track progress of
well, to the model that we adopted, and also commitments that we've made to the committee, including the financial implications, which are the huge factor that we need to look at, and risk associated with the type of model that we adopted. It's for that reason that we will be giving an update in relation to that, Chair. And I'll invite my CEO to go into details in terms of the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, honourable member, once more, thanks for the opportunity to come back to the corporate committee to update on the progress.
I'll protect you, CEO. If you can just come closer to the mic, okay, before you are asked to.
Okay, thank you. Chairperson, we can go to the beginning. The presentation will follow, firstly, the journey we have taken in implementing the flexible labor strategy. It will be important to reflect on the commitment made to the committee the first time we were here on the matter, progress to date, also indicate the strengthening requirements for managing this process from a SACO point of view, financial implications both for SACO and the employees, reference to the chair in terms of what true value accrues to the employees, and then risk and mitigants. It was one of the things which, when looking at the minutes, it was evident that we needed to cover. Going back to August, when we presented the strategy, there were four items which were highlighted by the committee, which I think is important to cover through the discussion. Cost implication, the risk, the proposed model to be implemented, more importantly, how we migrate into what be the final destination in terms of the model itself, and benefit to the employees. I will go straight into one of the slides, which I think forms the fundamental of the update. And I will spend a little bit more time on this slide because it's critical as we look at the update to refer back to this slide. On the left-hand side is where we were at when we presented. Chair, allow me just to talk about the four quadrants. The red one, firstly, number one, which is the outsource. The outsource model is where we're using labor brokers. The cost-source model is where we were to appoint a single service provider as a fixed fee, guided by our rules to manage the temporary staff or flexible labor stuff. The third, which is in-source, is where we as APO take ownership of the management process of the temporary staff, particularly giving examples to that where we would have a team internally which manage, or we have company we own which manages. So it's the point where we actually take full without any limitation in terms of management of the staff. The D model is where ultimately, if we were to mature further than that, would be where if there is capacity to outsource that which is internally managed, we would outsource to balance the hours of work. But that is not where probably our core business is at, but probably more on the in-source model. At that time, our original suggested gain was to make sure that we get out of the outsource model, in other words, terminate the labor brokers, and proceed to a cost source where we have a third party, as I've indicated, with a fixed contract to us managing the labor for us, while once we build capacity internally. However, that was the indication at that time. Journey taken today is where probably the start of the update of the process so far. I can confirm that we have terminated the labor brokers. Just as a point, the journey was to include the cost sourcing element. I will also reflect again on this matter. Due to the strike at that time, we found ourselves in a situation where we needed to take a decision where we contract the employees, almost starting to move towards an in-source model. So we had now to contact directly the staff without having to go and contract together with a partner. However, we did consider using a strategic partner to assist us in that journey. The difference is that we then began to take them on contract period, which I will cover later on. Again, it was really the situation in which we find ourselves, which is not necessarily a challenge as such, because it's towards the journey where we wanted to find ourselves at. So also appreciating that all what we need to do is to align to the commitments we have made as we proceed. Also in that, creating economic value to employees. As a start of the update, the journey involved three steps major. Termination of the labor broker in the second quarter of 2012, employing the flexible staff for a period of 12 months. That's where the change came in, where we actually not only contacted them for 6 months, we went to 12 months. Again, it's something which at the time of the strike we negotiated, and it was agreed that probably best to wait for contract them for 12 months. Also given the transition and the things needed to do until we close the transition into the insoles, it would have given us a bit of time and also managing the stress challenges ahead. To do this, we needed also to commence the actual implementation. With that change of the contract, it means that there is a slight change in terms of the 6 months versus the 12 months timeline towards now implementing in the second quarter of the second to third quarter of this financial year. First to that, just a little more detail. The agreement was to terminate the labor broker in second quarter, which we did. There was a bit of a delay because we had set notice to them, but all was done beginning of June and ended in first end of September. In terms of the employment of labor staff, the REBI, as I indicated, we contracted them now for 12 months, and that we completed by the end of September. The total of staff which we had to take into the contract is 7,911, and it was a negotiated settlement, the 12 months, in terms of what we were faced at the time of the strike. To date, we have started some of the aspects which are critical in the transition towards the model where we believe we need to be at. We've done the biographical and demographic information, and records are now validated, and the formal vetting process is what has been critically managed. The contract, as highlighted, has been concluded. I would like to emphasize that the service provider which did the report, Navigant, we have been very close with them because they started the process in managing the step going forward to make sure that although we may find ourselves having to adjust even the conditions we find ourselves at, we don't lose the focus of what we want to accomplish. One of the things which has been critical is appreciating the quantum of work which needs to be done. And from a sub point of view, we need to have an additional people up to 10 who will assist us in the implementation process. It is critical to appreciate that vetting is a key requirement, particularly with some of the staff members who will need to now work in a retail, and also considering the journey into cost bank, which will be critical for us to consider going forward. And successful vetted employees will be appointed as permanent part-timers. The permanent part-timers come into the very flexible model where we want a limited hour of work, taking into account seasonality, but with eventually having employees who are part of the support team. We would obviously don't have, because we don't have the capability, we'll continue to use external suppliers to help us in the process. And in event where there is a permanent full-time job, the permanent partners will be the ones who get a preference in terms of being appointed in those roles. So through you, Chair, I would request the CFO just to speak to the financial implications in terms of where we find ourselves with the assessment we've done so far.
Thank you, Chair. If we look at my left-hand side of the slide, we have extracted in particular 2 months, the month of August 2012 and the month of January 2012. When you look at the month of August, the total employee cost, including flexible labor is now the labor brokering labor. The total there is 283.1 million. And when you look at January, where we now have that total cost of 7,911 extra employees, the part-timers, the total is 281.5 million. What has happened is with the labor brokers, the total, an hourly rate of 24.40 was paid to the labor brokers and was a split between of 62% to the employee and 38% to the labor broker. Now, when you focus on January, this is where now that 24.40 is paid directly to the employee. The additional costs envisaged, if no benefits accrues to the employees, is about 13.7 million, and there we're looking at uniforms and training at 1.5%. Now, if we move forward and we say we now take in the staff, assuming that we take them in at 24.40, the training, of course, remains, so the uniform remains, but there's also a 30% additional cost that is for the benefits. And that's explained on my right-hand side. The top just speaks to no benefits accruing, and there we're just talking of vacation leave, sick leave. At the bottom, where we need to add in 30%, there we see vacation leave, sick leave, maternity leave, family responsibility, study, the thing to check, medical, pension fund, housing allowance, and funeral cover. Thank you, Dan.
Chair, once more, just to conclude on the financial. The highlights of the financials, as the CFO has indicated, is an indication of what now, with the process we have come to, has accrued towards the employees. The change in the 61%, which was an amount payable to the labor broker, now payable to directly to the employees. In conclusion, Chair, we have appreciated that there are a number of risks and we need to highlight them and how we're approaching them. Firstly is the fact that there could be possible illegal stress, given that employees with 1 year contract may demand a permanent employment. We believe that it is critical to have a very clear communication strategy, change management intervention, which speaks to what we have concluded in terms of the model, including a well-structured deliberation with all stakeholders. Secondly, we do have an appreciation that the 12 months have implications in terms of the new labor law, in terms of permanent transfer when the local problem gets it. However, we believe that it will be very important to clarify also in terms of what the strategy is about, the procedures, irrespective of whether the amendments are not, how we find ourselves in that position and ensure that we're not contravening the law. Reputational risk also is also critical. Given that all the time, this is one of the challenging aspects of our organization in terms of our employee base. We need to really be strong in communicating our plan, integrate our stakeholders, take them along as much as possible. The vetting exercise it also will be a challenge, given that some of the employees are working within the contracted employees. So now when we vet them and they're no longer qualifying, they may also want to challenge that. And again, it's something we need to manage. Given that, although we have had this situation, but going forward, we cannot continue to have people who may not necessarily qualify when vetted to be in our base. But we need to do it in a manner which is structured and well communicated. It remains a focus for us in terms of that cost. The indication as shared by the CFO is a reality which we are taking to the board and with the information we have now, seeking board directive in terms of what is the final a level which we're going to take the staff. Because at this point in time, once we have managed to get value to the current temporary employees through the labor broking cutoff, we still have not broken into the parity between our internal permanent staff and the temporary staff. So we need to look at that aggressively against the fact that that has impacted business, but not taking out of it the need for appropriate crewing, because we need to be able to operate and we need to take care of the challenges even if during seasonality times. With that, Chair, I hope I have covered the key milestones which were critical during the session, and also what we have covered through the journey so far. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. That basically concludes our presentation, Chair. I think one important factor to add to the presentations that as previously undertaken, that part of the board strategic review of the presidency to come around with a turnaround plan, which we are in the final stage of concluding. I know that management will be presenting the final plan to the board, which was due to present to both our shareholder and the parliament. The idea around the plan is to say, how best do you absorb these employees? Because you can't do that without looking at your profitability or, you know, the growth in terms of your business. And that's a critical aspect that we've directed management to basically look at as an issue that really says that we need new product development that would allow us to create space for these employees that we've had indirectly, previously through the labor broking arrangement in the business for many years, that we can create. And the only way we can find a system where we can create a better or different employment in the business is when we look at, you know, growth, and that growth can only be appreciated with the plan that we put together as a business. And when we share the plan, which obviously includes also product development around the capitalization in terms of the bank itself, and also the appreciation of technology as a means to look at the declining, you know, volumes in terms of mail and so on, as a way in which we can try and absorb the increase in the system. I must say it's obviously a difficult task. We cannot obviously ignore the fact, but we want to make sure that we don't end up, you know, with our people sitting without employment and hence working hard to do that. Okay. Thank you. Just in case if there's any addition that my board members would like to indicate in addition to the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
No addition.
Certainly, Chair.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much, Chairperson. Members, we must quickly go for discussion. But before we go for discussion, just to note that we've got an apology for Deputy Minister and Honourable Jack for not attending this meeting for various reasons of work commitments and so on. The other issue which Honourable Rotua has been looking at me with a very, very unpleasant eye or looking is that in people just moving in and out without any explanation. Is that, as we all are aware, that our committee secretary, Captain Cosmo, his mother passed on. So, you know, that around. It's a matter that I wanted to raise original about the documentation. That part of the problem with the documentation is that we didn't have enormous support in the office to be able to deal with the documents and the other things and so on. So I'm told that the burial will happen this weekend, but we're still going to get the actual details and so on. But we then have finally the content advisor for the committee being appointed. But this time something happened that we were poaching from DOC. So normally the opposite. So we have our content advisor now. I always forget the name. You can tell us his name. that's how new he is.
Thank you, Jefferson, honorable members. My name is Mombo Malika. I'm poached from the DOC. I'm not new to the industry at all. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, to allow us to poach from DOC. And we've got our stand-in committee secretary for the time when Mr. Goma is not here.
My name is Loli Sibisi. Thank you.
So I'm at ease now, Honorable Murutu. There are no problems now. But we've also got a committee assistant.
My name is Danielle Martin. I'm acting in for Stable is sick.
Thank you. So that's how the staff is today. Don't associate us with this institution where they are actors. This is temporary. We are not in Hollywood, not at all. Members, let's go for the discussion for them today. Honorable Murutuwa, Killen, Sniman, Stain, Gekari, Soma, Shin, Tami. Honorable Drohan.
I hope Jenkins. I think according to what the committee has requested SAPO to do, they have really tried their utmost best, and I think we do thank them for this. But I needed just to understand. As you have indicated on this document, that as of January 2013, a total of 7,911 people had been appointed on the 12-month contract. And I wanted us to get assurance, if possible, of how many of those will be converted to permanent. And also the issue of this, the terms used here, the permanent part-time and the permanent, what? Maybe you can elaborate more so that we understand what it means. I'm saying this because it seems to have a cost, you know, attached to this. You see it to be a most appropriate way to go. Those are my three questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Second, I would like to look at the revised page. I think that is that's the one, page 6. Difficult. Yeah. Page 6 and 7, and then just proceed to page 8. Chair, actually, earlier I indicated that I have an outdated document. I had suggested that I just be issued with a latest version, but I haven't received that yet. Is it the copy over there? Yes. But neither does it mine.
Okay, you'll get it just now.
Okay.
My apologies.
Thank you. I just wanted to have clarity about, especially page 7, if we can proceed to the next page. Now, from where the progress that has been made, and I think we need to commend SAPO for at least having considered and having looked at their business model. Because last time, they actually highlighted the concerns that they had with regards to their specific business model. That they are also competing, and that they must have a viable business model that will balance everything. That is, making the necessary profit, ensuring that they're looking after their people, and now also accommodating the new expenses. Now, I just want to understand very clearly. Are we then saying that from the perspective of page 8, from the perspective of immediate comparisons between August 2012 and January 2013, it looks actually like a good proposal, but that does not take into account the other additional costs. So in other words, is this going to put your business model at risk if you have high operational costs? Or are you going to have to, at some stage, maybe not immediately, but in time to come, face a very real situation where you will have to resort to some additional equipment to fulfill the role of workers? And we all understand how important it is to get a stable workforce for the country, to help people survive in hardship, etc. But is it going to be the tip? And how do you see future budget implications and impact on this? I am saying this, Chairperson, because we can also not allow a situation where, under pressure, they're taking a dip and it's just one stretch too far, and the business model is disturbed and collapses, and therefore you come back to us as a committee saying, you push us over this edge, you push us over this cliff, now you must make out a good case why government must bail us out. So please, if we can just have a better understanding, and I see the chairperson is smiling, but we know that is very often what happens.
We give them 10 billion, don't we?
Thank you very much. Can we get a bit? And I mean, I think the time has come for us to be open and be frank about these matters. To say, this is going to be a bridge too far. Or, we will have to make other medium-term adjustments to our business model or whatever. But please be open and frank with us about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, I wanted to check the information on this matter of labor about our post office bank and the post office itself. In the past, we told the post office it did is not what it used to be. I mean, because of technology, people are not sending telegrams if they can send an SMS. But on the side of the bank itself, I thought that is where would save a lot of labor, because in the far rural areas there, you've got to travel 20, 30, 50 kilometers to town to reach any bank or auto bank. And I thought all the people there, pensioners, teachers, peasants, farm workers, could find this bank very useful, and as a result it would employ a lot of people. Can you give us an idea, generally speaking, especially in the rural area where there's no competition, because auto banks or real banks are only in town far away, whether this post office bank is viable for job creation of these people that you're complaining about that they might lose their jobs? Thank you. Lisa.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and may I start by sharing the same sentiment as Honorable Mutua, to say that at least they are doing relevant best in terms of making progress on this subject. Having said that, last time when you made a presentation, I was in, excuse you, of I think it was 48 million or something at Telkom in terms of salaries and wages that you will end.
What is the remaining?
bless you and share the server. okay. So I've asked the first, so is that one that different? The CFO additional cost in terms of no, I'll get that one. I'll get an interest on it now. Chair, in terms of the benefits that you have been highlighting, that is that 48 million, but you didn't talk to that 48 million that you presented last time as an increase in terms of the salaries and wages in terms of the budget. One would love to hear that. How do you link the two, or is, has been more money, like additional budget, more than 48, because that one was more of an estimate, I want to assume. And what is the real cost moving forward for your current financial year, as it may? But here, I'm asking that not to create an impression that to absorb staff, we should change our mind on that because it's going to be costly. It's the right thing to do, to provide our people with decent jobs. Secondly, the thing that I said to link and to get Lochi to, which I think I would be assisted, is that we might not necessarily need, I'm using that word very carefully, all the stuff that has been given by the employment agencies, as it may. My question will be in terms of our doing our business. Has it changed drastically to necessitate that? And what impact does it have in terms of decreasing of the maids that we take at post office? Because also you need to talk to them so that scientifically we can understand what does it mean in real terms. Link that chair, which is sub one also, in terms of your change management as a lay or looking at other ways of doing your business so that you remain relevant financially and otherwise. Extending your services to the areas that we need most. And I don't want to say what the chair normally says, because you don't need to that future plans that you will take absorb this stuff, or we might pack them and absorb them, noting the geographical spread of them also, because they're in various parts of the country. I'm saying probably one will get an understanding in terms of what the chair has said, that we are also planning to see how do we make our business sustainable. The other chair, which I'm raising up, just to get a clarity, I'm not implying that I've got a challenge to vetting our employees, but we're adopting warm bodies that were provided by the employment agencies that were comfortable with them providing services to us. What changes now for how we want to vet them? I hope it does make sense. Because you should also be informed when you apply that you are going to be vetted, so that you are given an opportunity if you know that you've got funny things that the system is going to kick you out. And I'm saying you can't introduce new things, because my understanding is that it's the same one point that you are taking. And how do we intend to manage that? The very last one, Chair, is the issue by law or what we wish it to be practically. How many months a person should be on a temporary basis? Is it 6 months or 12 months? And with that 12 months, what does that mean? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Emma?
Thanks very much, Comrade Chair. Couple of questions. Maybe I can just touch on almost like a follow-up to Honourable Sormer's question here, and that relates to the vetting issue. And I'm sure you may find that there will be some who are not able to be employed permanently, maybe relating to criminal records that may come up, anything like that, but where you find that somebody is not necessarily suitable to be employed permanently, I mean, would yourselves then be looking at trying to help that person upskill them now and then improve their skills that would then enable them to be employed permanently, if that's the case, if it relates to skills, etc. Now, last year, and I've got my presentation here from last year, and notes that I've made there, and in fact which yourselves have indicated last year, is that all of these employees would receive training. Now, in your current presentation, you haven't said anything about that. That seems to be missing in the current presentation. I think I've missed it. But maybe you could just clarify that. Because it then links to this issue of some of those who are vetted who might not be suitable. And I'm qualifying myself that if they're not suitable because of skills, well, it's going to be taken to help them get those skills. But in your presentation, if I'm looking at last year's presentation and I compare it to this year's presentation, there are some changes in terms of your targets. There are some changes. And on your current presentation now, if I look at, look at page 5, and I compare it to one I had from last year, there are definitely some changes there. I'm not sure if you covered that in your presentation now today as to the reason for some of those changes, but I just wanted to point that out, that there are some changes in terms of the orders and your targets. For example, last year you were aiming to employ flexible staff, direct for 6 months, it was by the fourth quarter, you've moved that through to the third quarter, and then you've moved out the commitment of the model. You've also changed. Sorry?
Yeah, I was just saying that before the appointment of the chief financial officer.
But I just wanted to point that out, that there are some changes. The training I've covered. One of the things we spoke about last year, and you raised it here in your presentation here, is the capacity within SAPO to deal directly with the 7,900 employees. And I noticed on your slide here, on page 4, you say that originally the journey suggested that there's a need to build internal capacity. You don't really go much further to say how far you've gone in building that capacity. You just get some clarity around that. I've got two last questions. One of the things that we picked up on oversight visits is the number of vacancies that exist in post offices. It varies from post office to post office, but there are vacancies. And you have vacancies. Now, are you looking at filling those vacancies from some of these 7,900? And is that an exercise that's being undertaken at the moment? Because I would imagine some of them may well be qualified, suitably qualified to fill some of those vacancies. So instead of us just waiting for positions to arise, surely we should be looking at trying to fill some of those vacancies. Just about every post office we've been to, there have been some vacancies. I'd be interested to know whether that's being looked at. And then just my last question really is about monitoring this list of 7,900 employees. Now, as to how many are being taken into full-time employment and how that list is being depleted. And that forms part of the capacity within SAPO to deal, not only to deal with the employee directly, but also the ability to monitor and be able to provide regular updates as to, you know, what progress has been made. In helping many of these employees to become permanent staff. But I think the last thing really, I mean, you know, I hear what you're saying about costs, and I've heard some of the other comments that are made, but I think it maybe ties in a little bit with what the Honourable Kikana was saying, and it's really a case of also that the post office also has to look at becoming a lot more innovative, has to be taking serious steps to attract clients back to the post office. And it's things that was raised previously during the course of last year about steps that could be taken by the post office. And I think that's something that needs to be coming up. Certainly interesting to hear when we deal with the budget process. You know, what innovative steps are the post office taking to try and grow its base? I guess there's a range of things that the post office could be doing and should be doing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Members, I've got five members on my... guide me whether I'm going to break for tea or I finish the hand.
previous question, but just to refresh the presenter's mind, it's inevitable that there's going to be an overlap of questions here. Just to start off with, I want to start off with the number of presentations that we got, now taking into consideration the Honorable Killian's suggestion about the draft and so on. I want to suggest, there are the Communications Portfolio Committee after all. I want to suggest both to start with, as well as to address to you, that we should start looking at this is the ideal type of presentation to have video conferencing on. Perhaps in committee with them, but also for SADAPO, if you can't get the board members together, it's not a difficult presentation, there's no technological difficult things to deal with. I want to suggest that you start making use of technology as well. But I think more importantly, we cut down on the number of trees that we cut down, because ideally, before a presentation is sent to the committee, the board or the chair of the board at the very least should have been a look at it. So if we do cut out the three or four sets of presentations that we do get. Okay, Chair, this was just by means of introduction. I'm curious about the model that was followed. In the earlier presentation last August, you were very keen that you were going to follow the partly outsourced model until you've got your internal capacity built up, and then you go for the insourced model. You've now jumped directly to the insourced model. And I made a very specific note where it was said it was subject to the internal capacity, which you don't have in place yet. So I'm concerned that you've jumped to that particular model, which I'm truly in favor of, but it is subject to building up your internal capacity, which you have not done. So to me it says that you're going to have problems. If you don't have the internal capacity, but you're going for this particular model, that's required. And a number of my colleagues have referred to betting and that sort of thing, which is part of the internal capacity that you need. So I want you to touch on that, the reasons why you jump directly to that particular model. Then the other major concern that I have is the projections, your financial projections. And I made them, that's all they are. They are projections. And in this regard, I'd like to know what sort of minimum number of hours you've taken into consideration for the part-time employees, this one-year contract, and what sort of maximum hours have you taken into consideration to get to the figures that you've gotten. Because besides the fact that they vary substantially from what was presented last year, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And just by means of example, I want to refer you to page 8, where you indicate a saving of 1.6 million over the period from August to January. Now, on the right-hand side, the very first sentence says, the full amount inclusive of the labor brokerage fee, which is the 25 million, is paid to the individual. Now, I don't know where the saving then comes from. If you're paying the full amount that you used to pay to the brokers, the employees now, then there shouldn't be a saving of 1.6 million, because they're getting what they used to get, plus the broker fee. So that's the first anomaly that I want to bring up. Then, there was also a statement made by the group CEO that he said you will continue to use external supplies. And I'm not sure what you meant by that. Because the whole purpose of this is in fact to do away with the external supplies. So if you could just explain that particular sentence and what you mean by external supplies. Linked to this whole financial thing, and some of my colleagues again have touched on it, the Honorable Billion, the Honorable Reforma. The financial liability, both over the short term and the long term, you need to bear in mind that your grant is being phased out, your government grant is being phased out. You're already stretching the bottom of the barrel. You're now taking on this, and the sentiments and everything is good and it's honorable, but we can't put at risk the other 12,000 odd employees for the sake of the 7,500. Over the long term. And again, the question was made to, are you looking at other innovations to improve your income, which you haven't touched on? So I'm very concerned that you're not looking at the sustainability. You will be pressed into a corner by the strike. Again, I think the Honorable Gillian put it very diplomatically. basically when she said that you mustn't come back in 6 months' time, a year's time, and say, well, you know, the committee forced me to employ these people. And therefore, we now need to, or Treasury need to reinstate that government grant. You need to look at it in the context that the government grant is being based on. And if it's not sustainable, you need to play open cards and say, well, it's not going to be sustainable in long term. Now, linked to this short and long term, you've employed the entire 7,900 for, you've given them 12-month contract. What happens after this 12-month contract? Because you talk about a permanent part-time contract, which is 12 months, now, the fixed-term contract of 12 months, which will then translate into a permanent part-time contract. I don't quite get what the difference is going to be, other than perhaps, okay, it's not going to be 3 years, but it's going to be permanent, subject to the visit. Then, I want to also just ask the 7,900. If you look at the previous presentation, there were 7,500 part-time employees. You're now at 7,911. I don't know where the figure comes from. Now, you'll be aware that last year there were, in some communication with myself, there were people that were given this 12-month contract and then the very next day their contracts were terminated. And we currently have, I assume, I haven't heard from you, we currently still have cases before the CCMA. None of that has been addressed. How many of those people, and some of the reasons you came to me, and I thought they were legitimate reasons, but you haven't touched on it. How many of those 7,911 that were signed 12-month contract, their contract have been terminated? Because it will affect the whole scenario. And if you have feedback from the CCMA, it's still in front of them that perhaps you can't talk about it, but we need to know, is it likely that you're going to be, by the ruling of the CCMA, that you need to re-employ those people? Because all these things have a financial bearing, and therefore on the sustainability, not just of those people, and I stress this, not just of those people, but of the sustainability of the South African post office in general. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are very much along the same, and it's very much the feeling that I had a year ago, in August, sorry, that post office is being forced into something it cannot afford. And I think this is quite apparent from the figure that I have here today. This is why I raised concern last year, because I think this is understandable. I know that the CEO talked about the strategic reports that will perhaps give us some indication of how they can afford to pay for this, and that we'll get that in a couple of weeks' time. But my concern in that now is that you're having these expenses now. It might take your figure over the medium term. It's 97 million rand over 3 years, which it turns to an extra 32 million rand a year. Is that right? 2.5 million rand a year for the uniforms, training, and additional benefits. It doesn't take into account any projected salary increases for the extra people, as far as I can see, but presumably they're tied into the public service three-year agreement that was signed last year. So even in these figures are perhaps a little heavy. Also doesn't take into account the cost of 10 extra employees in the HR department to manage these extra people. And my concern is that you have a huge extra wage bill coming up with you, without any extra income to cover the cost of it. And your good plans, however much you put into your strategic plan to look for other business, secure other income, those will only perhaps start, and obviously this is something, only start to generate income in maybe 3-4 years time. So you're going to be, you know, an extra 100 million in the red on this thing before you even start to earn income to pay for this. I think I'd like some sort of feeling that whether you think you've been bullied into this and really whether it is sustainable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question is based on page 10. length of the flight. The possible risk about the strike. My understanding was that this is the collective agreement that is entered between with labor. Now, I don't understand the risk that you are putting in, because my understanding is that you have entered into a proper agreement with labor. Secondly, on page 4, says this group CEO was making a presentation. He made mention of the post office using a strategic partner. That made me to recall what transpired during your last presentation to this committee, wherein it was said by post office that there is a possibility of solving the work other companies like Telco. Is this strategic partner that is being referred to meaning Telcom, or I need to be taken on board to elaborate on that? Other last one is things with what Honorable saying is that you know that your self-governance subsidy comes to an end. And I think it's time you need to tell this committee whether you'll be able to sustain these employees that you're going to appoint, to avoid the situation in which you just appoint knowing that you don't have the necessary budget and you find people lingering without the responsibility. Maybe I'm also linking to your government financial. I know that the process is a senior executive. That one is performance contract. Maybe when you deal with this, you also be able to look at outside people with that process to make sure that people perform according to their contracts and their remuneration accordingly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Pandora.
There's nothing to the Honorable Governor.
I want to pass it on its part. But to other.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chief. There's nothing that I've been covered. I also want to speak to the issue of the long-term financial viability of this plan. I think that was probably one of the most important issues that I wanted to raise. And also, it's been extensively covered, the issue of HR capacity, where you've now actually got the ability to run the plan, because as my honourable colleagues have said before, you came with a specific plan when we saw you last time. And now it's changed, and the plan will, the success of this plan will largely depend on whether you've got the HR capacity. But then also, I think the Honourable Tubby has raised that you spoke about the issue last time you came to us about strategic partnering, possibly with Telcom, so that those employees who are not full-time or don't fill up the 40 hours, they actually outsourced to a company like Telcom. So I think the Honourable Tubby has also spoken about that. But then lastly also, on the issue of the illegal strikes, it was a possible risk, and Honourable Matami raised it, but I wanted to also ask you guys to bring us on board with regard to your relationship with your organised labour. Because of late, I've seen in the Business Times and in other media reports that you are definitely at loggerheads with these labour unions. So in fact, it's gone ahead to say that you don't consult them on important decisions that are taken. I think that's gone as far as to call for the removal of your HR executives for some of these unions. And I think these issues that will have definitely a direct impact on whether the flexible labour plan is going to be viable and successful. Will you actually bring us on board with that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Brocken.
Thank you, Chair. I just want some clarity on page 6. In the second box, they said that all previous labour brokers companies are given 12 months contract. I'm not sure if you interpreted correct. That was in 1st September 2012. The last group was the 25th September 2012. But when I look at the next one, it says as from the 31st of January 2013, and a total of 7,900 on 12-month contracts. So it says that all staff, including the staff, is that all staff, including the bus, on contract as from the 31st of January. So is be 12 months, at the end of 2014, or are you working from September 2012 to September 2017? Just want clarity as to your 12-month period, like 12-month period, to some clarity. Are you paying as a labor contract? Labor brokers, are they gone? Just want clarity on your labor brokers. Are they still there? They not there at the beginning 12 months to, you know, just want clarity on that issue itself. Thank you. And then I'm going to finish on the next page. There's a need to increase the number of permanent staff support by 10 persons. 10, only 10. Is that the 10 out of the 7,900? So, but yeah, that's just one clarity on the 10 staff. So what's going to happen to that 7,900? After the 12 months, what happens if it's really government, or I just want to be in also, the chairman to also, I want to know, I've received an email from the about the presentation. Maybe we can get emails of the presentation, please. Thank you.
Thank you. The problem I had, chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think just responding at strategic level, just in terms of the number of questions that have been raised, not necessarily going to each of the questions. Obviously, the team will respond to the technical questions, which would be dealt with in accordance with each of the honourable members' questions. But the question of the post-bank, which has been raised as a possibility of creating better employment. And of course, my board member who is responsible for this portfolio is very passionate about this part of the business, because we look at that as a way in terms of which it would help not only to give access to our people in the rural areas access to the capital market, and we look at it as a means that would enable, you know, SAPO to obviously increase the different products in the business. You will note, obviously, that our banking business service is obviously limited in terms of the Post Bank Act. We're not able to offer other different products that are supposed to be offering in line with the Banking Act, and hence the issue of the licensing is very critical for us. We are in a phase of corporatization. I think the biggest issue, just as part of sharing the information, was which part of the board has actually tasked management to look at is the funding issue, which obviously deals with the the capital adequacy requirement, which is provided for by the Banking Act, as well as the infrastructure refresh program for making sure that we get up the business from an IT point of view. And how we look at that is to say that once we have access to the different products and are able to provide fully-fledged banking services, that should be seen as a way in terms of which we can find a system of creating better employment for our employees. But what we looked at, in as much as we want to give access to our people in the rural areas, is to say the first people that we need to look at from a business point of view are the temporary workers that were previously employed through the labor program arrangement. Hence, the 12-month period also gives us an ability to look at the vacant posts that have been referred to, which is what we look at in terms of vetting some of these employees. For instance, not that we don't appreciate the vetting process that would have been passed by the labor brokers, but you find that situation where you have moved an employee who was sitting in the mail business based on the fact that this person is qualified to provide banking services provision. And that would require different banking processes so that we make sure that we align our business and risk is mitigated in line with the requirements of that particular position. And that's why we need to do those type of processes. In terms of sustainability of the business, obviously it is an issue that we take it seriously as a board, that we wouldn't want to find ourselves, to be quite honest, at some point having to go back to Treasury asking for funding, which would something that would now be termed as a bailout. That's something that I would not want to find myself in a situation where I have to decide over a board that we would have to find ourselves in that situation. And having created that problem by pressurizing the business, and that's the risk that you have to look at from a business point of view. But if you look at the breakdown of financials that have been presented, the only additional, and I think my CFO will get into details around it,
for low-effort sustainable revenue, because if you look at the flexible labor cost, they're the same as what we've been incurring in the business has already been able to maintain it, because all of the difference there is basically that the costs were shared between an employee and a broker. So all we did in terms of investing is to make sure that I'll get into details around this. Perhaps we can go back to that slide, tweaks, that was with the presentation, I think, on the financials. You'll see that the amount of the flexible labor cost, the amount that we've, as of August, plus the staff cost was the cost that we've already had based on our revenue. The additional costs, which are higher below that, which is what we have to look at from a business sustainability point of view. But the cost of flexible labor cost is exactly the same cost that we've been carrying. All that happened there is the sharing of that cost was between the employee and a labor broker. So there's no additional cost there. Save for the costs that have been highlighted there around uniform, training, as well as additional benefits. I think the bigger challenge, which is what we look at as a board, is basically the cost around benefits, which have been on the right-hand part of the presentation that highlights what are those costs, which would obviously be added into a business. Hence, I spoke about the issue of the turnaround time as a critical milestone for us, because all it would mean that if you have to absorb some of these employees and you have to incur additional costs from a business point of view, you can't do that without having to look at new product development to subsidize those costs. And then we've broken down the cost so that we're able to distinguish the cost that we've always incurred as a business and additional cost that we would have to incur if we were to take the employees on a permanent basis full time. And it does impact on the sustainability of the business on that basis. And other risks that we obviously have to mitigate as a business. But I think our plan, Chair and Honourable Member, when we start looking at issues of efficiencies within the business, for instance, when we look at issues of new product development, when we look at issues of aggressive marketing that we want to embark on in terms of making sure that we get, some of the costs that we've lost, that is the faster business, which will enable this business to be sustainable and successful. And those are the issues when we look at that plan in detail that we will present it to Parliament. We look into broadly to deal with some of these issues that we've highlighted. But I'll allow you to go to just in detail deal with some of the issues that were raised. I thought just at broad level, let me share some of the objectives that we look at as a board. Thank you.
Madam, before the CEO, on that broad level, Chair, I'm talking about, I think they were dealing with two separate issues. Probably there is not coming across clearly. You've got one phase, the first phase, where you almost because I'm just trying to understand it in a similar way, that you've got this particular under the employment agency, where all you're getting probably 60-something percent. The other percentage were going to the agency itself. That is the first stage where you, instead of paying that 80-something percentage to an employment agent, now the money goes automatically to the employee. But they are not permanent. They are still permanent part-time. They are not permanent. Now they are not adding any cost to staff. You still have no additional cost. But now the second phase is how now do you make them permanent, which will be determined in terms of availability of funded force and so on. Because if it's not clearly clarifying that, I think that's where the issue comes from. Because to me, there are two phases. The first one is that to give the 80%, which technically, although it was their money, they seem to around 80-70% increment immediately. Because now the money comes back to them at one part. But that has not added the cost to suffer. Now the second phase, it will where you say, what cost do you have, which are existing, which are currently funded anyway, which are not adding additional cost, but you appoint now people to those positions and so on. Where both up to come up as can then you prioritize these people to get it. But I just want to understand whether my understanding is correct, whether that's how we are managing this. Because if it's not clearly understood at that level, I think the confusion becomes the more basic which comes out in terms of the members. But I just wanted to get clear at that level, whether my understanding is wrong or
I'm misunderstanding exactly the problem.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. That's exactly my understanding. I may not have put it in the manner that you've done, but you've put it correctly. To be seen. There's a difference, and the difference comes in the manner that you've outlined.
Thank you, Chair, Madam and Honourable Members. I will probably start from the last discussion to just close that one in terms of the open line question on the assurance. The process today, we don't have a total assurance in terms of how many numbers we're going to take of the 7911 against the process which we follow. Ideally, if all is well, we'd like to, if there are no other betting issues and other limitations, we are obviously like to try and manage them inside as possible through the period or until when we, the 12 months. I can just share as an indication that of this pool, so far we have transferred against the vacancy about 355 since the process started, where we are identifying opportunity for those who are in the temporary position to move into permanent position. So it's something we're managing effectively. We, in terms of the part-time permanent, the real, maybe if I was trying to see if I can clarify that a bit, is that we need to have a pool of people who are not only full 8 hours, but who are within our organization. Ideally, that what would be a permanent part-time. They are there for short-term, but they are not in the same category in terms of hours of work. The intent has always been how best we make sure that those become real employment opportunities. And that's where the benefit costs have to be understood and weighed against the viability of business, approved by the board going forward, if that's that's something which we can afford to do. That's the process which will be finalized in the period going to the end of the 12 months. Chair has covered the vetting aspect. Just to re-emphasize that it's against the regulatory aspect where we need to vet COPO because of the financial services requirements. There was a comment on can all employees be integrated? Chair has covered a little bit and indicated around the fact that those were the costs associated since then. However, the need of appreciating of the business changes is key. Reference was made to the drop in mail business. What I wish to differentiate, and I think it will also share some of the viability aspects of the mail business, is that letter mail is declining, but the main component remains growing, and that is the component which is more profitable because it's not the component which is has a prescribed pricing point, the regulation. So you will see that when you look at the financials, for me, volumes are going down, but the profitability is not necessarily going far out of inflation. And that's because of the component which is the bulk mail, which is not letter mail, which is still growth, and that's where our greatest opportunity to compete and grow our business line for me. So it's not too doom and gloom, but there's an aggressive ability we need to create within the organization to use that the infrastructure to grow that component. In terms of the length of contract, we did appreciate that there's a risk that if the promulgation happens, we'll have to manage that. At that time, the challenge was, it was almost a deal breaker from a strategy point of view, but we felt that we can manage the process, and it's something we need to manage closely in terms of the risk going forward. Training is part of what we are doing. One of the reasons why we consider this as a viable option when it comes to training point of view, a number of these employees have been with us for quite a while. Given that prior learning is something which we need to recognize, and in terms of forward looking, we can and then train over and above, that experience which sits within the employees. And it's something which will be done and continue to be done in line with the roles they are playing and will be playing. And in the numbers, in terms of the financial implication, we just put a number, but not go into detail what we're training them on. But it's an average of what we believe the opportunity will be and the progress associated with those positions. It will continue to change, but something which we will have to manage as we migrate going forward. We covered a bit on the changes of dates in the private discussion, but just to confirm that in terms of the process, we find ourselves having to move to a situation where we absorb those employees into permanent contracts. And we did that because it was something which from a strike, a deal breaker. However, from a next step, it began to take us a little faster the process. We had to use our own system in parallel with the permanent employees, rather than going and swap out new system, which was an advantage. And a cost saving. We didn't have to develop a different process, unlike if we had been on a corporate similar. However, we took advantage of a strategic partner to assist us in making sure that much as we internally managing that, we're not losing the internal capacity from a staff point of view remains something which we need to manage. But the advantage of a strategic partner is that we have a source of skill which we can use in the transition to a point that at the end of the process, we don't end up with an employee base which is no longer required. So we're trying to use minimal people which we take on managing the process versus using a strategic partner. So at the end of the process, we have a better balance of the roles required in the process versus the number of heads we inherited during the process. I have indicated 10. It's not all senior, but it's part administrative and part a senior team. At a much senior level, we don't anticipate that there's a change in terms of a higher level. We believe that the same senior team should be able to manage that, but more in administrative level where it's critical. Vacancies remain something which we're monitoring. We took a decision that we would fill the position under close review. So as we don't end up filling because there are vacancies, but we feel because the need is well understood going forward. Our business has had challenges in terms of vacancies, but we're trying to take that challenge into an opportunity where we align appropriately. We continue to match skill versus vacancies, which at times, when you look at the temporal pool, it's a bit of a challenge because it's not necessarily the highly skilled people in that pool. Now to match with the vacancy is something which we do, and reference the earlier comment on the 355 we have already done in the last 3-4 months. But we appreciate it for the fact that it will not necessarily be a very easy one to do in terms of matching of that. The tracking of what is happening to the pool is what we do. Hence, we could indicate where we're migrating in terms of so far where we have converted them. We at least can say that we have gone through the process of looking at the database of what we've taken from the labor brokers, and now we have a cleaner base of what the profile of individuals are and where we can migrate them to. And it's something which we continuously monitor. The level to which we grow our business is in line with the turnaround strategy the chairperson has referred to, chairperson of the board has referred to, in terms of what we will be presenting and what we're following through. We believe that we're not too aggressive, but we're realistic in terms of what the business challenges are, and we continuously converting that into a budget item in terms of performance. There was also a comment on the model we are at, outsourcing versus insourcing, and also the fact that we may have migrated to that without taking into account internal capacity. Firstly, as I've highlighted, it is something which we But because of the stress situation we find in first aid, we took advantage of appreciating that that could be a step toward the insourcing situation. We would then, in the next few months, until the end of the 12-month contract, validate roles, ensure that we have aligned, ensure that we have understood the core requirements for seasonality and aligned appropriately, and where we would have to use technology going forward, we understand where the impact is going to be. Financially, of course, the chairperson has shared that we're continuously looking at the impact of what the financial implications are to business as we go through this migration from the outsourcing to the insourcing opportunity. As I go towards the end of my comments, so far, through your chair, the CFO will just comment on the financial side of the answer. There was a comment on the projections used in the financials. We took an average of 6, which is on the upper side. In terms of the temporary, we are more towards the 4 hours, but that was an average which we took based on the past years. And we felt that it's a good indication of what the worst case will be. Anything else will be better than those projections. Again, it was a safer approach in terms of how we do our financial projections going forward. I think largely there is a comment which indicates how prudent we have been in terms of the financials. I can say that we are continuously, against the fact that we are taking up a pool and simply transferring the funds from labor workers to back to, we're continuously looking at what implications are likely to be because of the profile of that base of employees. So that we're continuously looking at. Against the risks, one of the components which we have appreciated that is that if there was a push for equalizing the pay against the tenants, that would be the biggest risk. And that's where the board has really to be guiding us in terms of where we could be going forward, because that's where the jump will come out, where the benefits now have to be equalized. And now we have to take up excess hours in terms of the people who are currently working lower hours and take them into full hours. And that's where the biggest risk will be. But we believe that with prudent management, contracting, and appreciating of the seasonality, stakeholder engagement, we should be able to manage that that challenge. Our business is a seasonal business, and that component is part of what we have to put as part of how we run our business. So we need to manage that very closely. And I do believe that we can manage that going forward. The additional costs in terms of the 10 and the other, I think people will cover that. The strike component, it is correct that we have highlighted around the risk that there are those likelihood that there could be strike. We're not saying that we're not working hard in having proper agreements, but we do believe that from time to time you have pockets of those who may be not well covered in the agreement, and they may choose to go on strike. And we're just highlighting that it's something, one of the risks, which we just want to ensure that the committee has an appreciation of the fact that we are on line of sight of that, but it's something which we will continue to manage. We have an appreciation also that subsidy is going not to be part of what our financial model will be. And the numbers we will present later on around our 10-year strategy, take into account that assumption that subsidy won't be there. And the business model, inclusive the employee cost, is looked at aggressively against that background. So we are doing that. A challenging one on performance management. We have made decision to begin our year with an implementation of performance management system. And that's something which was missing within our organization in the broader sense. It was done in silos, but we believe that it's a better part for us for the year. We have actually built the process from the corporate plan, translated the targets, and now translating them into performance contracts. And that will start the financial year with the when it comes to relationship with labor, amid the comments in the media, I do believe that FED will put a very good structure in terms of how we communicate. And there's an alignment which was created from a chair to the right level within the union. There's a relationship which was structured between myself and the level of the union, and then continuous engagement. To give an example, as far back as Friday, I began to engage them around the change we're going to be going through on performance management, on the turnaround strategy, what are the challenges we're facing as an organization. So that the aim is to ensure that they are well informed and understand the needs of business. Yes, it's a relationship, so some of the elements of the past will still carry out with us for a while, but we believe that we've gone a long way to create the right medium for us to engage with them. There were comments for clarity on page 4, slide number 4. Apologies, slide number 6 on labor broadly. Firstly, yes, we have taken up the employees which were contracted by labor brokers to our base. As I highlighted on a trust fund contract, they are not permanent employees. They are contracted with a view that as we view the process, we then have a structured arrangement. The number which we have indicated was a number which made reference to what we had actually now conducted, just to make sure that it is an appreciation that the conversion, what was the resultant number which we have actually taken up into our work. I cannot recall, but I think there was a reference made to the use of external supplies, if I haven't covered that. It's around the vetting specifically where we would be continuing to use external supply. It's not external supply in terms of labor broking arrangement. We're not intending to go back to it for now. I don't know if the labor contractors have been terminated. As to one of the slides earlier on, it took a bit of time because we said notice and then terminate them accordingly. So that has been cut.
When does your advance 1 year start? That was that question. Or if you say you have contracted them for a year, when does it take today start?
The year starts, Chair, in September last year. So it will. We now want in that year to have completed the process in this financial, in this calendar year. Okay. I would, through your chair, ask for the CFO to make a comment, and then also just the executive HR to just comment on the cases pending.
Thank you, Chair. In response to the move from 42 to now what we see as 97. Pardon me, 48. Those figures were quite rough estimates as provided by the consultant that was brought in. But upon further investigation, we noted that particularly on the additional benefits, that's where the lag was. And that's how we got then the shift from that 48 to now what we see as the total of 97.7 million. Now, another question was asked that if it was just a move from the labor broker to ourselves, why are we sitting with now what appears to be a saving? The top line, stock cost, is all inclusive. Now, that difference is not necessarily a labor broker difference.
the difference is on other star components emanating. It's not the flexible labor component, because when you look at January, the figure is now consolidated. We split the figure in August so that we can reflect the labor blocking. Now that we are fully managing it, it's all consolidated to the 281. So the same is not necessary from the labor blocking side of things.
It might be the return post, another?
It could be. It could be any other stuff related difference.
Just to confirm, one of the things which we're working very hard is to get an optimal crewing model. And we will then see some of this indicate as service, but as we crew better, we then see how some of the hours can be optimized. So this is one of the aspects we need to really manage closely, is the crewing side of against the business needs, against the seasonality. And that where the supply chain is coming from.
I can remember something to follow up by that with your report. Does that cause clarity? What I'm going to amend was also ask clarity. If I'm also not going
to. No, I was just listening to the explanation given here. It's not giving us an indication of exactly where the problem is. I was just going to say, Charles, I hope that we are going to have this picked up by Auditor General so that it can be explicitly explained. Because the way now it is communicated to us, seemingly there are issues that are not quite clear. That's just what I wanted to.
On the same slide, I just want to understand the following. And I'm sorry, we are really labouring the labour issue. Fortunately, none of us is in labour. Just wanted to refer to the right-hand side of the slide. Do we then understand that we are engaging in a 12-month contract and that the top bullet, current one-year contract, that's a 12-month contract will include the following WCWs, but only those vetted for permanent part-time employment will then be considered for the additional benefits. Now, what are the minimum working hours for a part-time? In other words, are we seeing 4 hours? Are we seeing, what is a part-time? So, because if it is only 4 hours, what are we going to do with all the additional benefits that accrue to the relevant people? It's going to, unless that part-timer is used somewhere else as a part-timer, also in the family, it's going to be a huge cost to the sector to cover all the vacation leave, the sick leave, the family responsibility, housing allowance, all of that. What is the BCCAC say about permanent part-time? What would be the responsibility, and how do we make optimum use to make sure that this is not the tipping end that could put you in your business model at risk? Also, if you require X number of people who were brought in by the labour broker, it meant that you had X number of two hands that were necessary. Now, if those, how many would you have to get to keep your business rolling? My concern is that there's certain sort of component of labour that it seems to be that you're going to lose out. Do I understand you completely wrong, or do you just say that from that same page?
Before you respond, you see what we must do. Explain these things. In the legislation, the labor relation has something called permanent part-time, or it's your terminology. And what is in the legislation? I'm just raising that because you see, in the legislation, it's talking about part-time. It does not talk about permanent part-time.
the terminology we are using is within process people because of the nature of your business. They are permanent there, but they are part time. So probably the issue of terminology to be important is to also clarify it correctly so that we understand that permanent part time is what in the legislation might be reflected as a part time employee. But in your case, because you need them continuously, they become permanent part time. And other things and so on. But if you can just nicely explain that, so that because if you talk about the part time and you go to the Labor Relations Act, it's clear what the benefits can be attached to a permanent person, which seems to be the one bullet one. And then the full time or a permanent employee person and get the bullet two benefits and so on. But probably the explaining part of just do it in simple English, so that we understand. Otherwise, we're confused.
Thank you, Chair. I will do an intro, and through you, just get our professor to cover that. I just wanted to clarify the migration to benefits, because I think it's very important. We're not intending by virtue of inverted and give full benefit to the 100%. The anticipated that we will have a contractor. We then vet into what will be just outlined as how many. But the hours worked and the benefits associated should be in association with the number of hours. So it's not necessarily that you get less hours, but full benefit. And that's one of the reasons why when we're looking at how we're going to manage this, it was important to continue to have a service provider who has an appreciation for how such a model would be structured and what's that.
Chairperson, honorable members, the legislation defines an employee. It defines what an employee is. An employee is somebody that, very loosely translated in English, somebody that works for you, somebody that you pay. The details of that relationship then comes into the employment contract. If I hire you as a postman and I need you 4 hours a day, permanently, I will then reduce that in the contract of employment. Furthermore, Chairperson, there was a specific question that was asked about the contractual issues we've had at the CCMA. And we actually had 26 cases. All of them were lodged at the Western Cape CCMA. 21 of those related to an old policy in the post office that if you were retrenched way back, you would not necessarily be considered for reemployment, etc. The other two cases, the other three cases involved foreign nationals, and it had to do with the valid permits that they needed to provide us so that we can provide them with employment. The other two related to employees that used to work for us that were dismissed on serious misconduct. Those that were dismissed on serious misconduct, we haven't hired them back. We haven't offered them the 12-month contract. The nationals, we put the ball back into their court to say that if they provide us with the valid employment permits, we will appoint them. The 21, we have settled with them. We have offered them 12-month contracts because we found that their policy was old, and therefore we, from head office, we were able to deviate from that and offer them contracts. Thank you.
Maybe the question will be asked, the 21, are they part of the 791?
They are part of, yes, sir.
Honourable members, thank you very much. I think the issue around the auditing of the numbers has been highlighted that initially when we did the presentation in August, when we contracted a service provider to develop the model for us, there were a lot of assumptions. The models were great for board consideration and discussion with our shareholder, but the financial implications were assumptions made based on their interaction with management. But what we did was to then ask management to do an exercise to actually do the actuals. And that's the breakdown that we needed to do on that basis so that we get, in order for us as a board to be able to say, do
we want to adopt a, you know, conversion of the employees into, from temporary to permanent employees, we need to know what the financial implications would be. And those are actuals that we did. And we're sitting with a figure of 97 million there, which is based on the actual calculation. Obviously, from an auditing point of view, the figure of total employee cost of Gen would be the figure that gets audited. But if these employees are brought into the system, with those additional costs, auditing process would obviously also take place with regard to those numbers. But that's what explains the difference at the time when we presented initially, which was purely based on assumptions made by Compass at the time when we wanted to look at the best model. Thank you, Chair.
The eye level was up, as soon as the one up than the other. Member follow up, if you got any. I can see there are no follow up. Probably that you were too complicated on your language. Please simplify the language. Because for me, that's a simple issue of saying people are in labor brokers and you take them over, but you've got full-time employees. If vacancies become open, funded vacancies, then those who have already vetted and who qualify, then you transfer them to vacancies. We do not add actually any financial cost. I think your term, your language is a little bit...
I concur. So that is a symbol of that base. That's all what we're saying. That you will.
You say it very. You are saying academic.
Just congratulations on your summary of the presentation.
Well, we can have. I don't want to check. I mean, this thing of labor broker, temporary permanent, it seems like it's the norm today because places like ShopRite, supermarkets, your commercial enterprises are using the people who come when it is said to be prime time, a busy time. Why is it that they're taking ShopRite as one case? It seems to be relatively stable. Is it because we in the post office are not able to run our institution efficiently? Because if the system has worked with ShopRite and it is said that this is an international phenomenon these days, with the issue of labor brokers was challenged by the union. Now, if it is waiting for ShopRite, why can't we, can you just give us a difference, the difference that we inefficient? Is the CEO of ShopRite better competent than us? What is wrong? Is it us or the system itself?
Thank you. Do you know the motto of ShopRite?
Yeah, I was going to say, Honorable Chair, I think, well, I also want to answer to the CEO's inefficiency compared to my group CEO and that of ShopRite. But the approach that we take from SAPO as a board is basically to say that as a state-owned entity, we have an obligation of making sure that we contribute towards the new growth path and creating different environments in the country. Hence, the effort that we took as a board to initiate this program so that we are able to find a system where we gradually bring, you know, the temporary employees back into the system as part of our obligation in line with the new growth path. It's for that reason that we pursue this model, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and hence we're not really looking at comparing ourselves with the private sector. I believe that we have an obligation to contribute towards, you know, ensuring that our temporary workers have economic benefit. Hence, the immediate conversion of, you know, allocation of the funds which need to go to brokers made a huge difference to those employees immediately. And that's an immediate benefit, in as much as they are on a 12-month contract, but they see real value in terms of that benefit as opposed to sharing, you know, the cost.
with the program. It is for that basis that we continue to pursue a strategy that would align with our government objectives.
Thank you. Members, that was the presentation and the clarity. When do you think you will have made a considered progress? What is
that? Chair, not only are we looking at the contract period, which is the 12-month period that is provided the month of August, we believe that at that point in time, we will be able to come back to the committee. We believe that we continue to have to provide an update to the committee as to where we are and how far we've gone.
For the presentation, the responses and so on. We will call you at some time. Probably should be after the 1 year completion and check where the folks around this matter and so on. Otherwise, thank you very much and your team for the presentation. Continue doing your work. We'll meet at some other time.
Thank you. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we value the contribution for the help us in terms of the kind of debate we have at board level in making this business a better organisation. And thank you very much for the input and comments.
I'm sure members will agree that there is a progress in that particular matter in terms of moving forward as well. We hope that the next time when you come, we'll be moving past the conclusion. We know that we are not going to call you until you finalize the process, but we want to see a stage where you can come and present the master plan of the whole process so that we are able from time to time to check progress around that. But thank you very much for the work done. You seem to be doing very well. But my name, you organize them. They seem to turn to time using issues and so on. Thank you very much, the Chairperson and the team, as I indicated. Remember, we've got the issue of the program, which we need to deal with, the committee program. We have not included FAPC processes in the program because we assume that we have had the time check qualification, do the vetting and so on, which might take us to deal with the FAPC MS in the when we come back if we do those processes and so on, even the past experiences and so on. But before the sample leaves, that you see that next week is the year of FAPC. Field audit, which they were supposed to come back and do last year October. The issue of field audit and the progress on the SIE report. And those went to oversight, they will remember that the issue of the SIE report was having the concern from the SAPC employees that they don't seem to see progress around those particular matter and all. So they will be coming next week to deal with that particular presentation. Then from there, the presentation which we'll be having, it will move the following week. We'll be having DOC and the entity coming to the committee to tell us about progress in implementing the committee recommendation from time to time after oversight and committee. How are they progressing to implement those recommendations? I'm sure the matter which members raised sharply. That's going to go to oversight and have recommendations, but there seems to be no follow-up in implementing those recommendations after oversight. So after next week, then led by DOC, the entities will have to come. The reports are public records, which we hope all the entities they do have. They just have to go to the reports and be able to come and tell us how are they implementing or how are they putting processes in place to implement some of the recommendations of the oversight and other things which we normally do recommendations, but of course then by voting in that aspect. Then from the members will be the issue of starting off from the fifth, the following week, it will be the issue of starting to deal with the issue of strategic and budget for 2023-2024. But we've requested that we must also add the headquarters the form so that we can have some in terms of what they're proposing as a strategy and the setting of expenditure and so on, so that we don't prove budgets for people who can't spend. We should be able to relate their spending and the budget they are proposing in terms of how to move forward and so on. But you see that we are starting with the CIF. I think the only Friday where we are having a meeting will be the 15th, where we are dealing with the CIF, second meeting. That's a common debate where we're going to deal with. I know that at the next update sometimes they bring it back to us. But now there's no indication whether the appropriation committee or they bring it to us completely, which is a matter at the point where it is taken. Then we'll be able to see the premises as well. Then after that, on the 19th and 20th, we'll be dealing with the OC. We thought that to deal with the OC on the 19th of March might not be sufficient. So we don't want to be under that much pressure. If we don't finish, then we'll finish on the 20th, which will be the Wednesday. So those 2 days, but all of those days between 9-1, we are not going to be able to work a plan because there have been answers for us. So it will be half day for some of those days. It tells us if there are issues remaining and where they were able to continue and so on. Then the program continued, but you still remember that we conducted the program. The reason why was that we are trying to finish the strategic plan before we go to constituent people. So that if they are coming there for some faith. Because we're trying just to conduct the program, we finish everything before we go to constitution, so that at least if we manage to do that, then when we come back, the APC process comes in or in other things, we're able to focus on that. Not dealing with the strategic plan. If, of course, it's not going to be the case, if they are not supposed to come back for one reason or another, with some faith or some time in terms of the problem to deal with that and so on. But the issue, remember, which is important, is that we don't want the department to present long things when they come to us. We want them just to summarize, which become important for those who are responsible to make sure that documents are remembered in time. Because members will be able on their own to read documents. So if documents are not going to meet the desired time, it will put members in difficulty, which will end up going to have long meetings, because we have to deal with everything. But if a document arrives in time, remember that for sufficient time to go through the document. Then your presentation, 15 minutes or 30 minutes presentation is sufficient. Members are able to ask questions based on the document, but that will be determined by the document. But we must say that the lack of compliance with that, they will just send you back. We don't want to stress members and members. With documents are delayed, they have no society, and they have to dance around once you have been so we just appeal to the world to make sure that all the entities they submit their presentation in time and so on. And we hope the OC gentlemen that if possible, we don't have to wait for the deadline of Parliament to submit the strategic plan. If you can submit earlier to define for us so that the members start to have those documents and to be able to engage and read those documents, which make it easier to engage and so on. Not to wait for the cut-off date of the Parliament when we submit the report. We think that will help us. And the compliance in terms of the time of submitting the documents for the presentation for members to be able to go through in time. But as I'm saying, the problem will continue. We are not going to have that much other of time of dealing with these things and so on. But otherwise, members, that will be the problem. I've tried to avoid Friday, and we don't have mentioned others are put Friday and so on. So only one which will be using, but otherwise that will be the problem. It's up to members whether to agree with the trust of the problem. Honorable Shin?
What is the decision you're going to make about the cost issue? If you go to have anybody come here and talk to us about the Heineken issue. And also understand why we need to get all the strategic reports done, plans done before we go away. But I would like please for us to, as a committee, to discuss what to do after that, for the second working because it's not sure that it is. And there's probably any good start that's not here. We need to actually focus, I think, very much on the delivery of the department during the coming year.
Then when the ICASA is in place to accomplish a correct matter, then the issue of the law and forces who have been investigating the matter, which indeed we can do. But the issue which members have raised, one, that indeed is within ICASA to provide the security, for some security to the family and so on, because of this issue which is happening. So that's the matter which we say we can deal with the minister, because they've also returned to the minister. Because of it, how I have to deal with that matter, the matter to pursue, so that security is being provided and covered. The second issue which came was that we don't know at the committee level compliance in terms of licensing, by all the licensing. Now, the matter which we are saying, probably we are going to seek a detailed report from the CAS. Who are these people who have been licensed? Who are people who are paying and defaulting? So we don't know the entire thing at all. So that it does not become a weak hand. That because there is one license which is intended not to pay, or any application that is not paying, then we focus on that. But focus generally on the status whether this license is paying for the licenses and the other things. Who are not paying? What is the status? Because by doing a broader form of that. So that's how I thought we are moving forward around the. But all we are saying, it will mean we need to find a place for them to present that's
the point. I want to know then, Chairperson, are you then not going to allow my request or you reject my request to have the chairman of the ICASA come to this committee to explain what security, how they're actually viewing the issue of the hijacking, and basically I want him to come here and explain what they're doing about the whole issue of security of the council and how they view the issue of him being hijacked.
No, it's fine, we can do that. Probably the easiest way to start to do that is to write a formal letter to the chairperson and the ICASA to respond. And they have found the response if we need to follow up in a form of a meeting, probably take the decision at that time. But then to address the matter which are the honorable thing, probably the first step is to write to them and say, and put them to account on the matter, then when they respond, depending on the response. So the only problem is that they seem to be also under, they might be interdicted by the alleged. Now, there might be a difficult position sometimes, but if you call him, you must come to a public platform. You might have that if you come and pick up exercise where you said, I'm not saying anything, because everything is subject to and other things. But I think if you can, you agree with that, that formally our writer is asking to the person to ask him to account. And also taking into consideration the request, now formally request by the counselor himself in terms of the responsibility of security and so on. And if there are still any, then we can pick up at that point.
Chair, if I understood properly, the matter was in court, if I'm correct, which means, the police are there to, our law enforcement agency, the police are there to protect all citizens of this country. If anybody hijacks me, whether that is job-related or it's a coincidence because they were standing, criminals were standing at the robbers, but anybody who hijacks me, I report it as the police. It is their job to investigate and find out who did it, why, through the processes of arrest and court. So that's a sense security. I'm saying, though I agree that ICASA must come and do a presentation so that we can understand and see if, on top of the police security that is provided for all citizens, maybe you need, on top of that, above that, it still needs some further security. We can only decide that when they come and make a presentation. So as you say, Chair, you write a letter. But in the time being, my understanding was the police are on the matter, which is basic and a fundamental security for any citizen in any country. So I thought that for now suffices until we hear whether extra measures must also be taken.
Thank you, Member. I'm under the impression that you agree with the program. As can see, Honorable Father Member, moved the adoption of the program, but I don't have a present agreeing with her. Thanks very much, members. I'm sure that our own president of the council and so on. And then upon the receipt of that report, you know, the next event, we can try to do and see how to take it on. And I want to thank very much, members. We got the first meeting was finishing in time. I hope all the meetings are going to finish in time. We're going to exceed 1 o'clock. It's a good start. In 2013, let's keep up the good work. But of course, it depends on presenting and how you're presenting and what you're presenting. But we're going to inform the time. So, but otherwise, thank you very much, sir. And we'll see. Gentlemen, CTG for CTG, thank you very much for your presence. It seems that we are taking the work of the committee there now. You can see a CTG coming. Got a week. Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether I'm going to keep up with the pace, but it's a good start. So keep it just like that. And I want to thank you very much for attending.